You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Storytelling with a Beat on Snap Judgment. Tonight's theme, Notorious. More money, more problems, more stories than you know what to do with. That's coming up tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
Now, President Trump has issued 26 executive orders since his administration took over in late January. One of the first and most controversial was the initial travel ban that was issued just 1 week after he took office.
I'm establishing new vetting measures to keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the United States of America. We don't want them here. We want to ensure that we are not admitting into our country the very threats our soldiers are fighting overseas.
While that initial flurry of executive orders has gotten a lot of attention, many presidents have issued hundreds during their time in office.
Historically, this tool has been used by different U.S. presidents to varying degrees and to achieve different goals. Our next guest says we can understand executive orders in part by thinking of U.S. presidents as CEOs of enormous corporations.
Daniel Gitterman is the Thomas Willis Lambeth Distinguished Chair in Public Policy at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He's the author of the book Calling the Shots, The President, Executive Orders, and Public Policy. Daniel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. As we say in Chapel Hill, Madison is the second best college town in America.
Well, okay. I won't argue that now because we've got executive orders to talk about. And let's talk about the phrase because we've seen executive orders, administrative actions, presidential memoranda. Do these kind of fall under the general label of executive orders or executive actions?
So the two most common ones we're seeing are executive orders, which have official designations in the Federal Register and are publicized, and presidential memorandum, which are directive to agency or secretaries to carry out some action the president wishes. And those two together are probably the most common type of executive action right now.
And have we seen the use of those increase over time?
The numbers actually suggest historically that they're not actually increasing. FDR issued a record number of executive orders. So what we did see during the Obama presidency was growing use of this other tool called presidential memorandum. He certainly used that more. What seemed a little bit less common was many of these executive orders were signed without the fanfare that Trump has merited, the calling in of the White House press corps to the Oval Office to watch him actually read and sign the executive order. So they've become much more planned media events than they had in the past.
Yeah, I looked at the numbers of executive orders signed by various presidents over the years, and it varies up and down. But I wonder, is it so much the numbers or is it the scope? Because I imagine some of these are pretty trivial, you know, Zinc Recognition Day type things, and some of them are really important and sweeping.
Yeah, and you know what I tried to do in my book was to identify three particular which seemed to me dramatic in terms of the scope of power use, but the number is misleading. I think you really have to dig deep into each one to really understand its impact, and that's been true even for the ones that Trump have ordered. Some have been quite sweeping and others less so.
And where does the president get this power? Why does the president have these powers?
Under the Constitution, the president has executive power. It is either based in that Constitution that they act, or from authority that was delegated to them through a law from Congress. And so in every executive order, you will see the first sentence to read either under the U.S. Constitution or under a specific congressional statute that gives them that authority or power to act.
Talking to Daniel Gitterman, author of the new book Calling the Shots. It looks at presidents and their executive orders. You say while these tools have been around for a long time, you write that the Obama administration can be seen as a coming out party for executive orders. Why is that?
It was executive orders, but also presidential memorandum. And, you know, I think both in 1994, when President Clinton lost control of Congress, there began to be a strategy that the only way he would have any policy accomplishments was to go it alone. John Podesta, who was his chief of staff, also became an Obama advisor, and it was very much of a continuation of a strategy put in place with Bill Clinton. It intensified, actually, when Republicans gained control of Congress in 2010. So in both presidencies, after the midterm election, their legislative agenda was largely stuck in Congress, and this became the strategy to achieve any type of policy goals.
And you write, and a lot of your book focuses on this, what gives these executive orders and memoranda such heft is that the federal bureaucracy that the president administers is big. So there's a lot of power of the purse, I guess, which is usually what I think of as Congress is having. But they can really do a lot as a big employer, as a big purchaser, and as a big payer for services.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me just looking at the numbers since the New Deal is the dramatic size of federal procurement, the dramatic size of the federal workforce, and then just how much we spend in the purchase of health care. The federal government is the largest purchaser of health care through Medicare and Medicaid. And as the bureaucracy that implements those types of actions, the president has used those powers more and more to exercise political influence. And we've also seen what we call a politicization, where the White House itself is more and more calling the shots of what the federal bureaucracy does. And those types of orders or directives to secretaries basically say, you know, this is what the president would like to happen.
And there's been pushback in the Obama administration. There was gridlock between a Democratic president after a while and a Republican Congress. After President Trump was sworn in, here's House Speaker Paul Ryan from Wisconsin talking about President Obama and executive orders.
President Obama used his pen and phone and executive orders to exceed his power in our perspective. Everything that President Obama did by executive order, this new president can undo. We would like to see these things undone. And we'd like to see power restored to the people in the states, not the federal government. And that is what this new president is doing. He's restoring the proper balance. And in our opinion, he is undoing a lot of damage that was done by the last president who exceeded his power.
So can we say that President Obama, for example, exceeded his power in the use of executive orders?
You know, there were very few actions that Obama took. It was largely the immigration one that ran into some trouble in the courts, but the overwhelmingly number the judiciary thought were within his power. This is the type of issue, depending on who's in the White House, colors how you think about it. Paul Ryan prefers Trump's preferences on a lot of these policies issues. Trump certainly has the power to rescind a number of Obama orders. But in terms of executive power, Trump is using it just in different ways than Obama.
We're talking with Daniel Gitterman about his new book published by the Brookings Institution Press. It is called Calling the Shots, The President, Executive Orders, and Public Policy.
And we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think that executive orders are an important tool to bypass gridlock, or is it taking away the role of the legislative branch? Did you agree with the executive orders issued by President Obama? And what about those that have already come out of the Trump White House? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation about presidential executive orders, how they work, what they do, and when they go too far.
And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you think executive orders should be used sparingly, or are they a good solution for when the legislative branch is gridlocked and maybe not getting much done? Do you support how much President Trump has been using this tool so far? Would you rather see policies move through Congress instead? Call us at 800-642-1234. before or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Daniel Gitterman is with us. His new book is called Calling the Shots, The President, Executive Orders, and Public Policy. You write about the ongoing turf war, in a way, the balance of power between the executive branch, the presidency, the legislative branch, Congress, and then the judicial, all the courts. And these executive orders, obviously a tool in the president's kit. And for the president to do something, you write, one person needs to agree to do a thing. Congress, of course, we could see gridlock between parties. The courts can disagree among themselves. So does this tip the balance maybe too far in the president's favor?
Well, they certainly have a first mover advantage. And we should also acknowledge that sometimes after acting, Congress comes along and will approve it. Much of civil rights legislation, anti-discrimination legislation, started with the president and an order as the first mover, and Congress later came along. So, you know, you have models where Congress will come along. You know, several folks criticized the book because I didn't have a conclusion per se whether this growing use of executive order is a bad thing or a good thing, and the legislative branch, Congress, should be the one that makes it. I have a slightly different view, is that presidents are elected officials too, and we get to vote for them, and we get to change direction if we don't like the direction they're going in. And, you know, I see executive orders as they were in the 2016 campaign and will likely be in the 2020 campaign, an issue for voters to decide about and whether those orders go in a direction that they support or not. And if not, it's time to vote in a new president.
Let's bring in a caller at 800-642-1234. Joyce is with us in Madison. Joyce, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Joyce?
I'm just calling about the executive order question. I feel that, you know, if they can reverse, the next president can reverse the executive order, then, you know, you're just kind of going back and forth on this. You're playing a flip-flop game.
Joyce, thanks for the call. And that reminds me, Daniel, of the Mexico City rule, so-called, about whether recipients of U.S. foreign aid could talk about abortions. I mean, that's like a ritual now. Democrats take it out. Republicans put it back in.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few highly contested areas. One is the abortion issue. The other is labor and management, where presidents go back and forth. But there are others that very much survive the test of time. And one of the areas where Obama moved was to prohibit federal contractors and the federal government from discriminating based on gender identity or sexual orientation. And all the signals have been is that Trump is not going to undo that one. So there are areas that are, as your caller said, ping pong, highly politicized ones, but many of them don't get reversed.
Thanks a lot for that call, Joyce, at 800-642-1234. Let's talk about checks and balances. How often do either Congress or courts say, okay, President, you've gone too far with this executive order?
Congress rarely, because it would require far more than a majority. It would require a two-thirds majority, because if a majority decided to rescind an executive order, president would likely veto it, and it would require a two-thirds congressional override. So you rarely see that kind of majority in Congress that's willing to exert an override of a president's executive order. So Congress rarely steps in. They can also change a statute, but that's hard too. And you do see the courts placing some limits. I think you've seen in this administration that the courts are going to be called upon a lot. And one of the things that's different about this administration is these executive orders usually get vetted internally within the Justice Department, the Office of White House Counsel, before they're issued. This administration issued some of their most controversial orders very, very quickly without a lot of internal legal vetting, which has, I think, opened them up to even more significant court challenge.
And let's talk about the symbolism of these. You mentioned President Trump, more so than past presidents, has made these signing ceremonies a regular event, or he did early on anyway. How much of this is substantial for any president versus, hey, I'm showing my supporters that I'm doing something?
Well, clearly there's a political and a symbolic piece, and it wasn't by accident that Obama chose some of his campaign issues. I'm going to repeal Obamacare. I'm going to shut down immigration from these countries as early orders. So there is a piece which is symbolic and political. The other piece, which is for voters and constituents, is they watch the evening news or listen to their local radio station or open up their newspaper, and the headlines are Trump acts to do X, and they assume that it's done, it's over, and don't follow exactly what happens with the order after it's issued. But in terms of political impact for voters, it's huge.
Right, and let's wrap up on that point. How much actually happens from that order? How much of that is just setting a course that hopefully Congress will sign on to with the funding, say, that would be required to enact an order?
You know, I think it's a little of both. I think, for example, a very initial order that suggested not enforcing mandates in the Affordable Care Act, that is going to require congressional action. And you see that shifting now to Congress about what to do with the Affordable Care Act. There are others, for example, a freeze on federal hiring. That happened immediately. The federal government is doing no more hiring at the moment. And some which have to go through the rulemaking process will take a little bit more time. And so people really have to pay attention to the substance and scope of each order as they come.
Daniel, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've been talking to Daniel Gitterman. He's the Thomas Willis Lambeth Distinguished Chair in Public Policy at UNC Chapel Hill. He's the author of a new book titled Calling the Shots, The President, Executive Orders, and Public Policy. Still time for you to share your thoughts on executive orders, say of past presidents, President Obama, or the current administration and President Trump. Share those over on the Central Time Facebook page.